This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 7th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Later on this edition of Ozarks, examining slumping housing numbers in Arkansas, previewing the third installment of the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival, and Wayne Bell offers entertainment choices to get us through the hot months.
We'll start this program, though, with an update on the U.S. Marshals Museum planned for construction in Fort Smith. The spring has brought gifts for the project, items from the U.S. Marshals' considerable history that will be on exhibit, and late last week, an anonymous gift of $1 million. I talked with Jim Dunn, the executive director of the museum, yesterday about the fundraising progress for the museum.
We have still a long way to go, but this indicates to others that we are serious, that we are making progress, and that the project is going to happen. And so people like to be a part of a successful project, and this indicates that that's what's happening now. So it is good at several different levels for us. So, as I have said before, we're on cloud nine, and we hope to get more of these in the coming weeks and months.
Now, I remember when there was sort of the discussion there about the campaign. There was going to be a Fort Smith, a regional estate, and a national campaign. Where are we on that timeline?
Well, we are still deep into the local campaign, and we probably will finish the local campaign in late July or early August. And when I say finish, that means we will wrap up the formal part of the campaign. There will still be a number of cards outstanding, and we have had a number of donors tell us that it will not be until the end of the year before they're ready to make a pledge. So make no mistake about it, the local campaign will continue. But once the formal campaign, local campaign is over, we will then turn our full-time and attention to recruiting our statewide leadership. So you can expect that to get into full swing, I hope, sometime this fall. We do not have a formal timeline yet because we are actively recruiting statewide leadership, and that has not been consummated yet.
And the goal remains $50 million to build and open. And this has been a fruitful spring. This gift, of course, it was announced late last week, but also the Bass Reeves memorabilia and some other items have come to the Marshal's possession.
Yeah. Yes. We have a lot of momentum right now. It seems like the more we do, the more we're able to do. And the last artifacts that we picked up were from Al Butler, who was one of the marshals who led the efforts to get Ole Miss integrated with James Meredith, who protected school children that integrated the New Orleans School District. Mr. Butler is a friend of the Marshals Museum, dropped by and brought a white helmet, which may not sound like much, but that helmet has been through quite a bit, and he wore it during the riot at Ole Miss, and he was the lead U.S. Marshal down there. He had a baton that he used to protect himself and a bloodied armband. He also had a helmet that he wore at the Pentagon riots, and that helmet is somewhat of a U.S. Marshal's icon. It's a very famous photograph of Al wearing that helmet, and it's just symbolic of the U.S. Marshals and their stand against rioters at Oxford, Mississippi back in 1962.
And, you know, when you talk about Bass Reeves or these particular items, it does again show the unique story and the American history that can be told at this museum.
Yes. And, of course, I didn't mention Bass Reeves because we have had so much publicity about that, but we do now have the gun and the badge in our possession, and We have had some educational programming with respect to that gun and badge. We've had over 800 school children from Fort Smith and Greenwood come to the museum offices, and we have showed those artifacts to those school children, told them not only about Bass Reeves and his history with the Parker Court, but we've used that as an opportunity to tell of the history of the U.S. Marshals. So that's been a great educational tool. And as I look out my window, I can see where the Bass Reeves statue and monument's going to be. And so all this fits in together, and it's going to tell a great story.
Jim Dunn is executive director of the U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith.
Arkansas's home sales numbers were down 23% when compared to home sales in the state in 2010. Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net recently talked to David Taylor, a mortgage banker with National Bank of Arkansas, about the bleak housing figures. He told Roby that the drop in housing sales in the state can be attributed to severe weather and a big difference between April 2010 and April 2011.
Well, you can blame these results in part on Uncle Sam and Mother Nature. In the month of April, we saw the number of units sold statewide fall some 23%, and the valuations fell by nearly 25% when you compare year-over-year numbers. For starters, April 2010 was the final month of a federal tax credit for first-time home buyers, and that saw a lot of folks come through the door with purchases. So when you stack the numbers against each other, there's a real rough comparison. Also, people will remember that Arkansas had a horrible April as far as severe weather is concerned. Nearly half the month was consumed with storms and tornadoes. That deterred some people from shopping for a home, I think.
And when you crawl through these housing numbers, David, are there any good signs that you see in there?
Well, a couple of things. First, the average price of a home in Arkansas has remained pretty steady, and we haven't seen those prices fall or rise dramatically for a long time like we've seen in some other states. So that's one thing. There were also pockets of urban or suburban areas around the state that didn't have a terrible month. For instance, Jonesboro, Hot Springs, Conway, Fort Smith, they all had single-digit declines or even gains. So the housing market was much better in those important areas of the state.
David, any indication of how May may shape up for the housing market in Arkansas?
Well, anecdotally, I think it's going to be a rough patch, maybe not as bad as April, but I'll be surprised if there's a big rebound. Looking at what I've been seeing, it seems slower. Again, there was poor weather in May, and a year ago in May, there was still a backlog of those big home sales with the federal tax credit still clogging the system. So I see May as a month where we could still see some rough comparisons to last year.
David Taylor is a mortgage banker with National Bank of Arkansas. He talked with Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net about April's housing numbers in Arkansas.
Support for content from TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering small business solutions, including high-speed mobile broadband, wireless email, global services, and push-to-talk. More information at a Verizon communication store or online at vzw.com/small business.
Earth, sky.
A 2011 study estimates that insect-eating bats in North America save farmers at least $3.7 billion a year in pest control costs.
That's putting a dollar amount on an ecological service, eating insects, provided by bats. And it's one reason concerns continue to grow over the spread of a disease affecting bats called white nose syndrome, which has decimated bat populations in recent years.
To estimate the value of pest control provided by bats, scientists took a close look at how many insects bats were eating during their flight across the night sky. They found that a single little brown bat can eat up to 4 to 8 grams each night.
That's only about the weight of a spoonful of sugar, yet enough to save $12 to $173 per acre in pesticide costs each year.
The disease affecting bats, white nose syndrome, is thought to be caused by a fungus. By 2011, this disease had killed 1 million bats in North America.
Other threats to bat populations include habitat loss, invasive species, and wind energy turbines. Authors of the study warn that noticeable economic losses to North American agriculture could occur in the next 4 to 5 years due to losses of bat populations. For more details, come to earthsky.org and search for the word bats. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy newsroom is Stephen Gates. He is the curator. That's the title we've decided upon.
Okay.
For the KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. Two down. Third one coming up.
Third one coming up on Thursday, again, as always, June 9th, 7:30. And this one, again, as was the second, is at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Parish Hall.
Now, there are three works on the program. And I want to talk about the one that is scheduled to be played second first, because we think this is a world premiere.
It is. I checked last night.
Okay, it is a world premiere.
Dr. Bob Mueller is, people will recognize him from having played harpsichord on the first two concerts that we've had. He is, of course, also a composer. I think that, I don't know this, but I think if you asked him, he'd say that what he really is a composer, and all these other things are related to that, of course. But anyway, we're going to do a quartet that he has just finished as we sit here and speak for oboe, violin, viola, and cello. And his wife is an oboist. Many people will know her, Teresa Delaplane. She has taught oboe at the university for a number of years and plays principal in orchestras and that sort of thing. And so it's kind of written for her, but also for the rest of us, and also really for the summer festival.
I know you can't speak for him, but I would think on one hand it'd be wonderful to write something for a family member or a spouse or a very close friend. On the other hand, I mean, you got to check the ego a little bit, I would assume.
Probably.
Because they might come back and say, well, what if you did this or did that?
Yeah. Or, gee, this is too hard. This is too easy. It's not flashy enough, or it's too flashy, or whatever. And I think for all of us, though, including his wife, one of the really neat things, of course, about doing a new piece when the composer is right here is that we can get him to come in and listen and say, you know, is this kind of what you had in mind? And is this what you had in your ear as you wrote? You know, that was, to talk history for just a little bit, that was so common back in, oh, I don't know, the 18th and 19th centuries, where composers were usually the first people who played their music, you know, Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, who more conducted, whatever, that the notion of playing music for by a composer who's long dead, of course, is a relatively recent notion, you know, kind of a 19th century notion. And so it's really a pleasure to have the composer right here saying, well, this maybe should go a little faster or slower or louder or, you know, any of those things that could be helpful in trying to get across whatever it was he has to say in the piece, if you will.
Now, you mentioned he finished this spring.
Yes.
Do you, as musicians, say, okay, now that you've finished it, this is what what if he came back and said, after hearing a rehearsal or something, and tweaked it? Would that be okay?
That would be okay up to a point. I mean, if he you know, recomposed 5 minutes worth, that would probably be real hard. We'd try, you know, but Bob is such a good performer in his own right that he would never do that to us.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? I mean, he might say, well, gee, having heard a performance, I want to revise it, and would you all play it again next September or something like that? And, you know, because we're all here, all the people who are playing it are
right.
here.
So Bob Mueller's Quartet for Oboe and Strings is in the middle of the program.
Right.
You'll begin with Mozart.
Well, beginning with Mozart, Mozart wrote six quintets for two violins, two violas, and cello. And they sort of form a set, and there's a very the best known of those six is one in G minor, a very beautiful piece, of course. We're playing one in C major, equally lovely, not quite as well known, but it gives everybody plenty to do. And I might mention that Molly Sharp is visiting again, and she, of course, grew up in Fayetteville, and she's playing viola with us, along with other people whose names you all would recognize. And so that's one of the reasons that I wanted to try to schedule one of these Mozart quintets. It also happens that I really love them. And so back in, I don't know, March or so, Eugene Kong and I got together and listened to more than one and decided that this was the one we'd do this summer. And, of course, it's nice to know for us there's five more. You know, they can keep us busy for some time.
So the Mozart quintet, two violins, two violas, and a cello.
Right.
You'll end the program with a sextet. You'll bring in another cello.
Bring in another cello. And there's this is by Brahms. Mm-hmm. He wrote two sextets. This is a relatively early one for him in B-flat major. Again, it's pretty well known. Brahms is interesting in that he's interesting in a lot of ways and wrote a lot of great music. But in terms of chamber music, he wrote, he really apparently liked writing for just strings, even though he was a pianist and wrote some of our greatest piano chamber music. But he wrote three string quartets, and then he wrote two quintets for the same instrumentation as the Mozart. And then he wrote two sextets for two violins, two violas, and two cellos. And we're doing the first of those two sextets. We have a kind of an interesting situation arose prior to the June 2nd concert, where the woman who we had asked to come in and play cello, whose name is Kari Caldwell, she plays principal cello in Sona, mm-hmm. and she plays principal cello in Tulsa. And so I thought, you know, how nice it would be to have her in to play with us this summer. Well, she broke a finger. And so last week, we were able to get another cellist from Tulsa, a woman named Diane Buchaneri, who came in and played the Mendelssohn Octet with us. And this week, we have a student of mine. Andrea Schenk is her name, and she's coming in and playing, sitting with me, which will be fun for both of us, I hope, and sitting with me playing the Brahms sextet with two cellos.
All right, so it's Mozart, Mueller, Brahms, St. Paul's Thursday night.
St. Paul's reception will follow, and of course everyone knows that at St. Paul's there's oodles of parking, most of it free, I believe. You can usually find a free space in the vicinity of St. Paul's pretty easily.
Stephen Gates is an organizer of the third annual KUAF Fulbright Summer Chamber Music Festival. The next concert is Thursday night at 7:30 at St. Paul's Episcopal Church Parish Hall in downtown Fayetteville.
Last week on Car Talk, once again, we were brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. The sacrifice you might have to make is beauty.
Okay.
So, and I would certainly make that sacrifice.
Sure.
I mean, I would sacrifice rust for money.
Okay.
Your wife made exactly that same decision some years ago. Don't miss the fun this week.
Join us for Car Talk.
Car Talk, Saturdays at 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The Fayetteville City Council tonight is scheduled to decide the fate of an expansion of a smoking ban that would extend into the city's clubs and bars. The ordinance to bar smoking inside all of the city's bars will be on its third reading tonight. It will require a supermajority, that is, six of the eight council members, to pass. If passed, the ban would take effect in early 2012.
The Alma Police Department is getting some help with the case of Morgan Nick, the 6-year-old girl abducted from a Little League baseball game in 1995. Police Chief Russell White says two retired detectives with a combined 82 years' experience have been sworn in as Alma police officers and are working for minimum wage. White says he hopes some fresh eyes will help eliminate some suspects from a lengthy list.
We have the name of the person who abducted Morgan. The problem being is that there's so many of them, we haven't been able to clear we can't establish whether we have or not. So these guys are totally dedicated to it, and we're hopeful.
White says the two new officers will work full-time on the Morgan Nick case, mainly from their homes in California and Florida. White says the two have also rented a home in Alma, where they plan to stay during frequent visits to Arkansas.
The highway promotions group Move Arkansas Forward plans to meet today to discuss a new marketing strategy for a highway improvement plan. The group is made up of private transportation industry members who want to convince Arkansans to vote for a 5-cent tax increase on diesel fuel to fund the improvements. Director of Arkansas Good Roads Council and committee member Johnny Boland says this will be a preliminary meeting.
What I'm hoping will take place is the structure will be put in place, you know, chairmans and treasurers and all that stuff, and we will launch the movement. And when we do that, then that's when the real, what I call boots on the ground, the leather of going out and convincing the people.
Boland says that the campaign will be funded by several industry groups and local chambers of commerce. A half-cent sales tax has already been placed on next November's ballot, but a diesel vote is awaiting Governor Beebe's call for a special election.
Arkansas's GDP for 2010 was an improvement of 2.3% over the 2009 GDP, according to a report released this morning by the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis. The state's sectors showing the best growth in 2010 were durable goods manufacturing, non-durable goods manufacturing, and retail. The state's 2010 GDP numbers ranked 26th in the country in terms of growth. A full summary about the report can be found at our content partners, thecitywire.com and talkbusiness.net. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals are back in a tie for first place in the Texas League North. The Naturals picked up an extra inning victory in Springdale last night and are tied for first with Tulsa. The Naturals don't play tonight, but begin a brief 4-day, 6-game road trip to North Little Rock tomorrow and return to Arvest Ballpark Sunday to begin an 8-game homestand.
This is Ozarks Large. It's Tuesday, June 7th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And on the phone with us from her office is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
That being significant, because I'm in my office, not in New Orleans.
You spent a better part of last week in New Orleans.
I did, but now I'm back to all the fun things that are going on in Northwest Arkansas.
You sound awfully chippy. You know, often when someone comes back from a vacation, it takes a while to get kind of back in gear, but you sound like you're right there.
Kyle, remember I was an actor before I became a journalist.
That's right.
Go with that.
Okay.
Okay, so this evening at 6 o'clock at the Clarion Hotel in Bentonville, a little preview of something that happens every summer in Northwest Arkansas. It's called A Taste of Opera, and it has performers from Opera in the Ozarks and food. It's $50, and it starts at 6 o'clock at the Clarion Hotel in Bentonville. You can call 253-8595 to find out more about that.
And if you just absolutely can't make it to this one, there are
two more
in Eureka?
I think so.
Yes. There's one on Thursday, and I believe, and one in July. So.
Okay.
Tonight's also auditions for adults for The Sound of Music at Rogers Little Theater. The summer musical under the direction of Ed McClure. Auditions are at 7 o'clock, and you can call Ed at 903-6546 to find out more. And, of course, the Arts Fest is in full swing in Bentonville all week. All sorts of wonderful things going on. Tonight at 5, there's a special menu tasting at La Petite Bistro. There's kids' stuff and story times and art on the square all through the week, with all sorts of things wrapping up next Friday and Saturday. So plenty going on, even if we're not in New Orleans.
Well, we're glad to have you back, Becca.
Yes, we are.
Thanks.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
150 years ago, recruits from all over the state gathered at camps in northern Arkansas to learn the trade of being a soldier. Along with the training in infantry and artillery drill came a threat that few of these raw troops had considered: disease. In the crowded camps, epidemics of such childhood diseases as measles and mumps ravaged men who had never before been exposed to them. The soldiers also suffered from such dreaded maladies as typhoid fever, cholera, malaria, and dysentery, which struck men down by the score. By the end of the Civil War in 1865, an estimated 66% of the more than 600,000 soldiers who did not live to return home were victims of disease, not combat. To learn more about Arkansas history and the 150th anniversary of the American Civil War, visit ArkansasCivilWar150.com. The Arkansas Civil War Sesquicentennial Commission is an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage. I'm Mark Christ.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's the 7th of June. Temperatures this week again in the 90s. It is summer, even if the calendar doesn't say so. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. You are not as big a fan of summer as I am.
I'm not, because I don't think that, you know, film and television and I don't think that they really bring their A game for the most part. I mean, music, we've got some big releases. I know that you are a big fan of Lady Gaga, but I would like to say 2 weeks ago we talked about her on this show, and they were predicting, Billboard was predicting her to sell about 450,000, and she sold 1.3 million. So, I mean,
which is in this day and age is amazing.
It's huge. I know a percentage of that came from Amazon sales, but you know, low price sales, but that's huge. But yeah, I mean, other than music, there's just not a whole lot to look forward to.
Well, now, some people would say, wait a second, this is summer blockbuster season at the movie theaters. Mm. You've got superheroes and R-rated comedies and cops and robbers.
Yeah, but let's talk about that for a minute, because you look at the last few weeks and you've had Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Okay, first off, I knew some of these movies were coming and they've already come and gone. Mm-hmm. Because Pirates of the Caribbean, Bridesmaids, Hangover 2, X-Men, they all came. They all had a big opening weekend, and then they went away.
Right.
And that's what it is in the summer. If you don't hit that first weekend, it's done. And even if you do hit that first weekend, something's going to come along the next weekend that's going to take you down.
And there might be a movie like, say, Water for Elephants that mm-hmm. plays in the theaters in the summer, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's an adult demographic, and quite frankly, when I saw that movie trailer coming out, I thought if this movie was good, if it was good, it would have come out in November for Oscar contention, because it has Christoph Waltz and Reese Witherspoon, two previous winners. It's beautiful. And I thought if it was good, they would have put it out then. And so I kind of thought when they put it out in like May, ooh, this doesn't look too hot.
Now on television, there are two programs that will move into late June that I've actually become hooked on. One is The Killing mm-hmm. on AMC, which is this.
I also watch.
And the other, and this is not a show I expected to like nor care about, and it's Game of Thrones on HBO, which is this medieval sort of fantasy sort of show.
Well, yeah, and I think that people have had, you know, some mixed reviews on that. As far as The Killing is concerned, it's only got two new episodes left. The nice thing about where we're at right now, as far as the summer's concerned, is that if it is hot and you want to stay inside, so many of the shows that maybe you didn't get to watch during the regular year, you can catch up on because they're available now, you know, that you can either rent the DVDs or find them on Hulu or something like that.
Or on demand. HBO and AMC yeah. put their shows on demand.
On demand. And so, you know, that'd be a great time to catch up on, you know, some stuff that maybe Boardwalk Empire or Good Wife or some of that stuff that came on during last season. But now regarding this summer, Nurse Jackie and The Killing and a few others are wrapping up relatively quickly. But The Killing is definitely something that people should watch. I mean, it's really good quality television. While we're on AMC, Breaking Bad will start this summer.
Which has won Emmys for Best Drama. So,
Best Actor, yeah. Best Dramatic Actor. It's won three times in a row. He's not eligible this year because he didn't run new episodes. So we'll have a new winner there. But Breaking Bad has got to hold AMC down, because what we normally have in the summer to look forward to is Mad Men starting in June. And Mad Men's not coming back until the winter. So Breaking Bad is acclaimed. Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston, like we said, have both won Emmys. And so it does come back starting in June.
Obviously, television doesn't have as much new on, because for decades, the sweeps months, when ratings are very much examined and that sets the ad rates, those end.
February, May, and November.
Right. Yep. So ratings didn't matter as much in summer. But cable channels, be they pay cable or basic cable, are kind of ignoring that now. And you see a lot of shows that come back on in summer. So television, I think, is better in summer than it used to be.
That started with HBO running Sex and the City in the summer. And there are some. The Closer, I know, started as a successful summer show. But, you know, it's funny. I was thinking the other day about the number one show on TV or they switch between Number One and their American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And both of those reality programs started in the summer. And I think that's part of the reason why in those early years I even liked them, because they were kind of mindless and fun in the summer. And then the minute they became successful, they ran them during the regular programming block in the fall and winter. So they had to go up against scripted drama, and it almost killed scripted drama. And you've got, you know, the same thing happened with Survivor. It ran in the summer that first year, and it was, you know, everybody was watching it. And then it became successful, and they started running it in the fall and winter. And so I think, you know, that's something I kind of miss. I mean, the only one that I can really point to, and I don't watch it anymore, I will say that, but I did, and it's actually quite good, is Fox's So You Think You Can Dance. Which you're looking at me like,
it's a dancing competition show.
Yeah,
but it's
kind of like
famous
American
people.
Idol, but it's not famous people, and it's actual, you know, young up and coming dancers. So I mean, you can see the talent there, and they have to adapt to different styles, and that's really the only thing Fox is offering during the summer this year. So, yeah, I mean, it's slim pickings.
Okay, so if you don't want to see superheroes flying at the Metroplex and you don't want to watch reruns or reality show, what about opening a book?
Well, yeah, you could always open a book. Do you have some that you're...
Well, Laura Hildebrand, who wrote one of the best books I've ever read, Seabiscuit, one of the most intensely researched books ever, has a new one called, relatively new, called Unbroken, which is set during World War II, and another true story. And that looks very promising. And I'm also reading right now a book that is The History of the Atlantic Ocean by Simon Winchester, who's a geologist and archaeologist.
Well, that's very highbrow. I am currently reading the biography of Shania Twain.
Seriously?
Yes. And, you know, I don't think that people understand... I'm not a big fan of hers.
She's Canadian. I know that
much.
She's
Canadian. She's pretty. I don't know very much about her
because
she's always been very
poor.
Private. But she's written an autobiography now with the backing of Oprah. And I saw her on Oprah before the show went off. And I thought, well, this looks interesting. So I picked it up. And it's actually pretty good. I mean, people don't understand the reason she's so private is she's had a really difficult life. There was abuse in her family between her parents, and then when it got settled, right before it got settled, her parents died in an automobile accident, a car crash, and she had to raise her siblings, and then she just went through a pretty painful divorce. And so, I mean, that's kind of as far as, you know, juicy summer biographies, that's actually kind of a good one to read because people don't know a whole lot about her, especially considering she's the best-selling artist of, you know, the 90s yeah. and 2000 period. I mean, that Come On Over album sold, I think, the highest ever for a female for a single album. So for a private person, it's a good autobiography.
Well, just so I don't sound too highbrow, just this past weekend I saw X-Men First Class, and I can't wait for Captain America First Avenger.
Thank God.
So
I
there you go.
For a minute I wouldn't live it down between So You Think You Can Dance and Shania Twain.
So I'll go see the superhero movies. How's that? Wayne, thank you.
Thank you.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club at FayettevilleFlyer.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The magazine Smart Money recently reported that Americans spent $20 billion on veterinary bills in 2010. And one-fifth of those pet owners will have used some form of alternative treatment. 10 years ago, Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich paid a visit to one of a handful of holistic veterinarians practicing in the U.S. She checks in to see how her practice is trending.
The convalescent suite at Broadfoot Animal Clinic on busy Highway 64 in Van Buren's quiet today, except for an emaciated white cat.
Oh, it's not pretty. But he's a sweet cat.
Dr. P.J. Broadfoot and her staff of five will go to great lengths to save an animal they believe has a viable chance on this earth. That's because she believes in the power of the body to heal itself if given the opportunity. In 1982, as a conventional vet, she began to experiment with nutritional supplements on her senior patients to help quell arthritis and observed immediate results.
These were dogs that had failed conventional therapy, all the pain medications. It's just, you know, when we look at the difference in those dogs that had already failed bute and aspirin, we didn't have very many nonsteroidals back then. And these dogs would be up and running in a couple of weeks. I had to take a step back and say, okay, now why did that happen? And, you know, it's one of those have-to-know things, have-to-know. So I started doing research on that particular product. And then it really changed my frame of reference or the way I think about medicine or the parameters of healing or health.
10 years later, she began to experiment with a thing called homotoxicology, Homotox for short, developed by a conventionally trained German physician, Hans Heinrich Reckewig, who combined natural homeopathic therapies into specific formulas. It's a complicated science, but think about your flu shot. A vaccine contains a killed or weakened part of the flu germ that is responsible for infection. Once injected into your body, it builds immunity to that disease.
Homotoxicology appeals to me because I can scientifically validate it. And actually, the interesting thing is that all the things that Dr. Reckewig said 50, 60, 70 years ago have actually been borne out by conventional wisdom, by scientific data. All of their theories on immunology, none of them, I have not seen one that has been negated yet by scientific principles or scientific research. So he was really brilliant.
Homotox, as well as popular homeopathic remedies marketed under the brand name Heal, that's H-E-E-L, are regulated by the FDA and are sold in hundreds of formulas across the United States, administered via tablets, gels, tinctures, and by injection by physicians. Some are sold only via prescription, and Dr. Broadfoot says dogs and cats respond really well to these kinds of treatments.
I would say that my primary practice, almost all of it, consists of supplements, nutrients, and complex homeopathics. And that would probably be 75 or 80% of my practice.
Dr. P.J. Broadfoot travels the world from Cornell University to China, where she's invited to lecture about complementary veterinary medicine. She's also co-authored a seminal professional text titled Integrating Complementary Medicine into Veterinary Practice. Published in 2009, the book sold out almost immediately after the first printing. After our first story aired 10 years ago, Dr. Broadfoot said she received lots of calls from listeners seeking help. They reported their pets finally got relief where conventional therapies had failed. One crippled dog was able to leap into the back of a truck again.
And another one of my favorite cases was a dog that had just done horribly. And when they brought her in, they brought her in on a blanket. She was flat on her side, one pupil was larger than the other one. She was not cognizant at all. We were somewhere between West Nile because she had caught a couple of birds. Dogs can't catch birds, not two or three of them in a row. They had to be sick birds. But she'd also been picked up by the animal shelter and had been exposed to distemper. So we took her blood, gave her a blood therapy. We actually treated that dog probably every 3 or 4 days for a week or two. But the second time they brought her in, she walked in on her own. And she was already picking up weight. She'd picked up 5 or 6 pounds in the first week. So it was really a remarkable change. So, and we get a lot of those cases. They're really fun when you get those because it's like magic. It's a voodoo medicine. No, it's really, there's actually, it's called immunological bystander. There's actually a scientific principle by which that works. But, you know, it really isn't voodoo, but it's kind of fun to call it that sometimes.
Despite seeing a heinous amount of suffering and death in her practice, Dr. Broadfoot, a small, pretty woman with a long black braid down to her waist, is always upbeat. Her enthusiasm may be linked to her successful practice, where she sees results other vets may not.
Well, and the thing is that yes, we use antibiotics. I use them sparingly because I know the fallout from antibiotics. They're not kind to the gut flora. They're not kind to the rest of the body microflora. They're very difficult for some mitochondrial populations. So those are and the mitochondria are battery packs of cells. There are 2,000 of them in every liver cell. If you shut them down, we lose our ability to process trash in the body.
Trash, meaning household and environmental toxins, including heavy metals. Animals do live close to the ground, and many eat a poor diet.
Things that we never used to see, we're just inundated with anymore. I see tons of hyperthyroid cats, hypothyroid dogs. We see cancer, you know, across all species. We see lots of diabetes, allergies, you know, particularly in dogs. But we see a few cats with the allergic dogs.
Dr. Broadfoot also prescribes certain nutraceuticals.
It's like, well, let's take Glycoflex, for example, which is a nutritional support formula for arthritis. We use it for other things.
And what's in it?
It is Perna. Primarily, it's Perna, which is a green lip mussel. It's a shellfish. That shellfish, to live, has to be able to open and close to eat. So everything that was that God intended to be in a joint is in, it's the bottom of the food chain. It's the original joint. The micronutrients and macronutrients that are necessary to build synovial fluid and cartilage are in that particular substance. And I think that's why it changed the way I practice medicine.
The doctor, who has bursitis, takes Glycoflex, a human brand of it, to treat her condition with remarkable success, she said.
And that was 30 years ago, nearly 30 years ago. And I'm in better shape now, joint-wise, than I was then.
Dr. Broadfoot refers to Glycoflex and supplements like it, not as tablets, which they are, but as functional food. And speaking of food, Dr. Broadfoot says vets are seeing lots of obesity now among animals due to consumption of refined grains mixed with poultry and beef slaughterhouse waste, a common pet food recipe.
But just changing their diet makes a huge difference. Like huskies, the dogs that are northern breeds, those dogs ate fish, whale blubber, who knows, you know. but they ate a very high-fat diet because that's what they need to survive in those really cold temperatures. And you feed them some kibble diet that's mostly grain, they're not growing grain up there. So you have to feed them what kind of type they are, and you'll find that a lot of their allergies and their physical issues will take care of themselves because you're feeding them what they can utilize.
Dr. Broadfoot uses both nature's variety and instinct at her clinic and at home, rotating brands, and she also cooks for her animals, meat, vegetables, and whole grains like barley.
If you woke up every morning and ate Cheerios for breakfast and had a peanut butter sandwich for lunch and a bologna sandwich for dinner, uh-huh, you are going to be in serious problems. And some people actually do eat like that. But if you feed the dog the same kibble year after year after year after year, you know, why some dogs seem to do okay on it, I don't know. Most of them actually, though, that's one of the big problems for the overweight issues that we see is we feed them too much carb. It's the same with us. We eat too many carbs.
Places like PetSmart carry a product called Wilderness under the brand name Blue Buffalo Company. It packages a variety of grain-free, real meat, dog, and cat food matched to carnivore natures. Dr. P.J. Broadfoot also suggests probiotics for digestion and cutting back on carbs, which will contribute to leaner middles, glossy coats, fewer allergies, and happy dogs and cats. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information on complementary veterinary care, you can go to the link found at ozarksatlarge.com. Time for our question today. The eventual winner will receive two tickets to an upcoming Northwest Arkansas
Naturals baseball game.
and two passes.
To Malco Theaters.
Anywhere in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, our question today involves international games.
All right.
You know, of course, of the Summer and Olympic Winter Games.
I do.
Those held every 4 years, broadcast to billions. They're the most famous and the most watched of all international multi-sport events.
Mm-hmm.
But far from the only one.
Right.
Right now, as you and I speak, Antoinette, in Liechtenstein, mm-hmm. they're holding the biennial edition of the International Games of the Small States of Europe.
Okay, I have not heard of that one.
Well, they'll award medals in things such as cycling, mm-hmm. tennis, and track and field.
Okay.
That's just the beginning. There's the All-Africa Games. There are the Black Sea Games. And every 4 years, the World Games take place.
All right.
World Games are open to all nations, but here's the catch. They involve sports not included now in the Olympics.
Sounds like my kind of games.
So golf, baseball, some others that are no longer, may have been in the Olympics in the past.
But they're not now.
But they're not now.
Okay.
But our question goes deeper than golf and baseball.
Of course it does.
When the World Games will be held again in 2 years,
mm-hmm.
we're right in the middle. They were held 2 years ago. They'll be held again in 2 years in Colombia.
Okay.
Which of these sports is not really a competitive sport in the World Games?
Okay, so not.
Not.
Okay.
One of these is bogus. Two of these are real.
Okay.
We're looking for the one that is not going to be at the World Games.
Okay.
Is it beach rugby,
uh-huh.
canoe polo, or fistball?
So beach rugby, canoe polo, or fistball.
Two of those will have competitors. One will not.
All right, then.
At the World Games. What's the number to call?
Number is 800-522-5823.
Beach rugby, canoe polo, or fistball.
Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 7th of June, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist Louise Erdrich, born in Little Falls, Minnesota, 1954, grew up in Wahpeton, North Dakota. Her mother, French Ojibwe, her father, German. Her parents taught at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. She went off to Dartmouth, 1972, the year that the university started admitting women, and the year they established a new Native American Studies program. Louise Erdrich started off as a poet. Her first book was Jack Light. She said, "I began to tell stories in the poems and then realized that there was not enough room, so she moved on to fiction." Her first short story, The Red Convertible, came out in 1981. And in 1984, she published Love Medicine, a novel made up of 14 interrelated stories, populated with characters in the fictional town of Argus, North Dakota, or the nearby reservation. Marie Lazar, who starts out life convinced that she wants to be a nun, and her rival Lulu Lamartine. After Love Medicine, Louise Erdrich wrote many novels set in the same fictional place, and Marie and Lulu and Nectar Cashpaw all reappeared. Novels including The Last Report on the Miracles at Little No Horse, The Master Butcher's Singing Club, The Plague of Doves, and Shadow Tag. Louise Erdrich, who said, "By having children, I've both sabotaged and saved myself as a writer. With a child, you certainly can't be a Bruce Chatwin or a Hemingway living the adventurer writer life. No, running with the bulls at Pamplona. If you value your relationship with your children, you can't write about them. There is also one's inclination to be charming instead of presenting a grittier truth about the world. But then, having children has also made me this particular writer. Without my children, I'd have written with less fervor. I wouldn't understand life in the same way. I'd write fewer comic scenes, which are the most challenging." It's the birthday of the novelist Harry Cruz, born in Bacon County, Georgia, 1935. Was in the Marines during the Korean War, went to college on the GI Bill, published 8 novels when he was in his 30s, including The Gospel Singer, and wrote a memoir, A Childhood, The Biography of a Place. And it's the birthday of the novelist Elizabeth Bowen, born Dublin, 1899, an only child. Her father was mentally ill. Her mother died when she was 13. After that, the girl was raised by various relatives. Elizabeth Bowen said, "The original wish to write is the wish to make oneself felt." Her books included The Death of the Heart, The Heat of the Day, and Eva Trout. Here's a poem for today, a poem by April Lindner, entitled Supper. Turn the knob, the burner ticks, then exhales flame in a swift upburst, its dim roar like the surf. Your kitchen burns white, lamplight on enamel, warm with the promise of bread and soup. Outside, the night rains ink. To a stranger bracing his umbrella, think how your lit window must seem both warm and cold, a kiss withheld, lights strung above a distant patio. Think how your bare arm, glimpsed as you chop celery or grate a carrot, glows like one link in a necklace, how the clink of silverware on porcelain carries to the street as you unfold your napkin, book spread beside your plate. Consider the ticking of rain against pavement, the stoplight red and steady as a flame. Supper, poem by April Lindner, from her collection Skin, published by Texas Tech University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Scheutzker. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Okay, time to answer today's trivia question, which is one that I've had a lot of fun with.
Yes.
and that is in the World Games, which will be held again in 2 years in Colombia. Colombia will be the host nation. And again, remembering the World Games held every 4 years for all nations, mm-hmm. but games that are not included in the Winter or Summer Olympics.
Yes.
Okay, which of these is not really a sport at the World Games?
Mm-hmm.
And the options were beach rugby, canoe polo, or fistball.
And the answer is beach rugby, which I think would be a great game. Anything that you can play on a beach would be lovely.
Well, canoe polo, I think we can figure out what that is.
Sure.
You're in canoes and you're...
Which sounds better for me, too, because I get tired when I'm swimming.
Fistball.
I have no... Do I punch people or
no,
something?
No, that's illegal. You cannot punch people. Fistball is very popular in Europe.
Okay.
Especially, apparently, Scandinavian countries. It's volleyball, more or less,
okay.
played outside, but you can let the ball bounce.
Oh,
so you don't
I'd be
have
better
to,
at that.
Yeah, you don't have to hit it on the fly. But fistball, apparently, is a real sport.
I like it.
Also real sports, gate ball and floor ball.
Huh.
All right. All right, we'll pick a winner out to for the tickets to Northwest Arkansas Naturals baseball.
And Macco Theater tickets.
And local support for Ozarks at Large comes from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, where the best of Profiles and Our Town have been combined into one Sunday section. Information available at nwaonline.com.
A service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Cricket.
And where is Cricket, Arkansas?
It is just outside of Omaha in Boone County.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Tomorrow at noon, another new edition of Ozarks at Large.
Have a nice day.